what's going on, guys? Happy Monday. What is it? April? Are we in April? Yeah. Dude, seriously, didn't know what month it was. Insane. I always say I don't need a watch. I need just like a calendar on my hand. Right? Like, who cares what time it is? Well, calendar is what I need to know. So, yeah, Monday, April 14th. How are you guys? Just got in from doing Jay Moore Sports on Fox Radio, Metal Monday. That was fun. I love Jay Moore. Guy's so fucking great. Has me down there on the Fox Radio. We riff Jay Moore Sports. It's always fun, man. So if you tune into that, I'm on usually every other Monday, Metal Mondays. How is everybody? Did you have a good weekend? I had a great weekend. I'll tell you what I did. I went to the Rainbow Bar and Grill 42nd anniversary, 42 years. 42 years on the Sunset Strip. How fucking great is that, man? Rock and roll. If you've never been to the Rainbow Bar and Grill and you're coming to LA and you listen to this show, obviously you like rock. Go immediately to the Rainbow Bar and Grill. Have some pizza and look at this place. It smokes any hard rock cafe or any bogus shit with a bunch of memorabilia. This thing smells, looks, and breathes the real deal. Restaurant was founded in 72, which is weird. I'm going to have the owner on. Not Mario, but his son Mike, pretty soon on the podcast. I am really fired up for that. The place just blows my mind. I mean, you know, they opened this restaurant in 72, and it quickly becomes just a complete rock and roll outlaw hangout. Awesome, man. People like Zeppelin would hang there, Cheech and Chong, Belushi, Kinnison. You know, later on, Motley Crue, Guns N' Roses, L.A. Guns. I mean, this place is... There's nothing like it. I've been all over. Yeah, I'm bragging. I've been all over, man. But for real, I've been everywhere, and I've never seen anything like this place. It is just... I mean, God. It's so awesome. I sound like an idiot right now, but I love it, man. It's mystical. It's mystical. Anyway, it's right on Sunset Strip, and it's been there exactly the same amount of time as the Comedy Store, and it feels like the Comedy Store to me of rock and roll, where the Comedy Store has all this history with the names on the wall and the photos and all the amazing performers and stuff. Mitzi's, like, full vision of an artist colony. This Rainbow Bar and Grill feels the same way. It just has that vibe of just, you know, it was like a rocker's tree fort, a hideout. It's really cool, man. Lemmy's there all the time. Lemmy doesn't hang out somewhere stupid. So you know it's got to be great if Lemmy's there. Here's what they had. They had a party. It was free. And here's who played. Great White without the singer. Bullet Boys with just the singer. Tracy Guns, who, by the way, rocked it. And my favorite of the day, Dave Lombardo's band, Film Play. These guys, I never even seen them before. I just went to go watch Dave. And wow, man, what a great band. If you haven't seen this band or heard them, get on this band, P-H-I-L-M. Insane, man. It was like seeing Caius with a little bit of Tool, with some Slayer, but the best fucking grooves. Lombardo, I mean, what are you thinking, Slayer? How dumb are you guys, man? Wake up. Get the money shit worked out, which I know they never will. It's probably over now between Slayer and Lombardo, but... You know, when you hear this guy drum, like, look, there's a lot of metal drummers out there, and they're all technical, like, you know, that kind of stuff. But to me, what you got to understand about drumming, like John Bonham, it's groove. And you can't even really describe groove, but as I was sitting there on the pavement, in the back parking lot of the Rainbow. You just, it's something that just feels so good. You're like, this fucking guy, pocket, groove, all that cliche words, but this is Dave Lombardo, man. And his bass player, oh, trying to get him on the podcast. I didn't even get his name yet, but he plays in War right now. This bass player is fire. If you guys, anybody knows his name, go ahead and tweet it to me at Dean Del Rey, R-A-Y. Follow me on Twitter if you're not. Anyway, check that band out. Thank you, Rainbow Bar and Grill. I'll look for that episode coming up pretty soon with the owner here. I can't even imagine how cool that's going to be, the stories that they must have. I mean, that's got to be a thing where you have so many stories, you really can't even remember them. It's just like a story blockage, you know? Things I want to talk to him about are like the Hollywood vampires they've got. I've tweeted or Instagrammed some photos of the party, and check out the Hollywood vampires, the Vampire's Lair. It's a private area for a certain group of guys like Alice Cooper, you know, John Lennon's name's on there, Keith Moon. Anyway, check it out. Go out there and see it. That was my weekend. It was great. Also, I was at the store on Saturday night. That crowd was fire. Thank you, Comedy Store. What a great crowd Saturday night. I was in the original room with some great comedians, Neil Brennan. Whew, man, that guy's great. He's always writing. That's how you get good, man. You just keep writing and writing and writing, and then you strike gold. If you want any tips on comedy. Not that I'm the guy to do it, but, you know. Thanks for checking out that bonus episode with Bill Burr. That was cool, right? So funny, man, Bill Burr. Let's see, quick shout-outs here. I'm going to be Artie Lang. I'm opening for Artie Lang this Saturday night at the Nokia. Who's coming out? Downtown Los Angeles. Looks like... Ray Delgadillo. I can't even say that. Ray Delgadillo. Man, that's a fucking tongue twister. He got tickets. He's Del Razor. He's going to be down there. That's pretty cool. Looking forward to meeting you, buddy. And also, I got some good shout outs on last week's podcast. Thomas Nagoyan. Becoming my favorite podcast. That's what he says. More 80s metal, please. I hear you, dude. That's not all I'm about. But I got some shit coming up. Like the Rainbow. All right. Also, Jay Moore. Get your tickets. I'm open for Jay Moore at the Fox Theater. May 10th. Bakersfield, Fox Theater. Get your tickets. Do it. And those are the show. Oh, and then, you know, I'll be with Jay Moore at the American Comedy Co. May 1, 2, and 3. Going to cut out of here before I do. Don't forget, this episode is brought to you by my favorite Northern California Harley-Davidson dealer, McGuire Harley-Davidson. McGuire. They got a brand new showroom, brand new spot, 93 First Avenue, North Pacheco, California. If you live in NorCal, go to McGuire. See Ryan. Tell him I'm here. I want some Del Razor deals. He'll hook you up, man. Go in there. They got great used bikes. I'm looking at it right now. I'm looking at their list of used bikes right now. They got a killer Dyna Switchback, 2012. Great deal. They've got some baggers. If you're going to Sturgis, who's going to Sturgis, tweet at me. I want to get out there this year. McGuire Harley-Davidson, brand new showroom. Cannot ask for a better family-owned business than McGuire Harley-Davidson. Check them out on Twitter, follow them on there, or go to their website, mcguire-hd.com. Get your bike rocking. Get your bike rocking. Also, Roland Sands Designs, another one of my sponsors. Fantastic. SoCal. If you live in SoCal, go to Roland Sands Designs. He's at 10571 Los Alamitos Boulevard. That's in Los Alamitos, California. Roland Sands. What a fantastic, cool store. It used to be a trophy shop, so it's kind of a cool spot. Go see my boy Rockabilly Jay and Roland. Roland, hands down, the best bike builder I've ever seen. Killing it. Go to his website. Look at his stuff, RolandSands.com. Maybe you don't ride a bike. He's got leather jackets, got cool t-shirts, gloves, hats, all kinds of cool stuff. So you can look cool in your neighborhood. Tired of not looking cool? I understand. Get some Roland Sands stuff. Leather jacket. I rock the Rowan. It's great. RolandSands.com. Thanks, Roland. Thanks, McGuire Harley Davidson. That's California right there. Two of my favorite bike shops. Thank you, guys. Thanks for all your emails at DeanDelRay@yahoo.com or hit me on Twitter, DeanDelRay, or Instagram, or come see a show. Hope to see you with Artie Lang this Saturday night. And thanks for the donations, man. I'm limping along here. Broken computer. But it's working out. Thanks for your donations, guys. And thanks for your support. You guys rock. Del Razor's rule. Keep rocking. Enjoy this episode. My guest today is Christian Spicer. Great friend of mine. Funny comedian. Hard worker. We discuss all kinds of stuff. We discuss life, basically. We had a real conversation here. You don't know who Christian Spicer is? That doesn't matter. You're going to know him now. You're going to be a fan of his. Check him out on Twitter at Spicer. Tell him you heard him here. Go see one of his shows at UCB or the Meltdown Comedy. Check it out. Thanks, guys. See you soon. Here he is, Christian Spicer. Yeah, all right. Here we are. Another episode of Let There Be Talk. I got a great guest today, a good friend of mine, comedian Christian Spicer. How are you, Big Daddy?
I'm good, man. I listened to enough of your show. Not everyone, but you know, it's a pod. I'm behind.
Yeah.
But I feel like I'm going to be the. I have to. Like everybody that's on it comments on how rad your place is.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to make sure that I did it also. It's so rad. I understand. Like people are like, what? Why is everyone? Because it's amazing. It's worth commenting on.
Well, I think. Thank you, man. I mean, and we were just talking. As weird as this is, my frame of mind this year is minimalist. You know, I was talking to Jesus Trejos about it. And what happened was I was at the store on the patio and a guy went by with one of those Airstreams.
Okay.
And Airstreams, I love Airstreams because I remember when Sean Penn's house burned down in Malibu, he said, fuck it.
Yeah.
Bought an Airstream, just set it up out there. And at the end of the day, if you're not married and you don't have kids and stuff, you start to think, you know, what do I need? That's about all you really need. And I think...
And this ping pong paddle.
Yeah, right.
That's all I need. And this lamp.
This rocking chair. The jerk, great. But, you know, I think it was Chelsea Peretti or maybe Sarah Silverman. One of the two, I can't remember, said, people, we don't need all this stuff. And Sarah Silverman... I don't know her. I just know her from the store and stuff.
Yeah.
But some of her tweets in the last 6 months have resonated so hard with me. Not the joke ones. One of them was, stop complaining and just be undeniable.
Sure.
Which is great. And I know she doesn't listen to my podcast or whatever, but I want to tell her one day when I see her, like, as corny as this sounds, these things hit me. The next one she said was... hard work pays off, but great work pays off better.
Sure.
Which is awesome, you know what I mean? Because that hit me as like, I'm working my ass off. I'm doing hundreds and hundreds of spots.
Right.
But you, when you're doing that work, make sure it's good work is how it hit me. Like, yeah, you can do all, like you could dig all the holes you want.
Right.
You know what I mean? But that's hard work.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, are you going to put a tree in there that's going to grow?
I think that's great advice. I think sometimes with comedy or any creative endeavor, sometimes I feel like it's hard to know while you're doing it what's hard work, what's fruitful work and what's just essentially spinning your tires in mud. Because yeah, in comedy especially, and I think, you know, musicians too, you know, back when I was doing that kind of stuff, you have bands that are out on the road every night, but and they take any gig they can, or stand-ups that do any open mic anywhere, and they'll be like, I did 900 shows this week or whatever, but it's they didn't put in any good work. There was no one in the audience to give honest feedback. And there's something to be said about, yeah, go and any mic is better than no mic sometimes. Yep. But I think a lot of people that are creative or, you know, in a creative profession, you know, you feel like you're so busy, but then you step back and it's like there's a difference between working hard and working smart.
That's right.
And sometimes I think it's hard to figure out how to work smart while you're in it.
Yeah.
You almost need to step back and think, okay, this is what I did last. I'm going to quit going to the mic at, you know, shitty open mic.
Yeah, yeah.
quit going there.
Well, that's a good point because there's somewhere in your life where you switch gears if you're a smart person. Like I'm fucking pounding and pounding for 2 years. Okay, now I know I probably shouldn't go to fucking, you know, Montebello for an open mic. It's not going to get me anything now. And that's an interesting point because you and I don't know when we met, but we met a few years ago, and I was putting in my time at the store,
yeah.
And you started putting in your time, and you weren't getting any stage time,
yeah,
and which was amazing to me because I just didn't quite get it. I was like, wait, this guy's funny. He's a hard worker. He's not hacky. He's not an idiot. He's cool. He's given every comedian in the fucking place stage time,
sure.
Down in San Diego at one of the best shows going. You know, at what's the place called?
Lestat's. Yeah.
One of my favorite places ever. You've given everyone stage time. You've done everything. And instead of saying, hey, fuck this, you do the old classic of find where you fit in. And you roll down the street to Meltdown, where you're really excelling. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I think some of it is, and you've done it. This is going to be, this podcast, I think, is just going to be us complimenting each other.
No. It's not about that, though. It's when you have hard workers on,
right?
That's why you want another hard worker on. And as much as I talk about it, you've got to understand that this is the hardest fucking thing we're doing, man. I mean, it's not brain surgery, of course, but what I'm saying is you're dropped into this bubble. You're from Houston, right?
Yeah.
I'm from the Bay Area. You're dropped into LA with 1 million people a day looking to get famous.
Right.
And or looking for stage time or to be a movie actor or a singer, whatever. To find your way in this town can easily eat you alive.
Oh, yeah, and it
and
does.
The thing I liked about you was you were like, well, fuck it. I'm not getting on here. I'm going to get established somewhere else. And what I always tell people is, if you don't get on at the store, it doesn't mean you're over.
Right.
Because you could be on TV next year and be on at the store.
Oh, sure.
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you were smart, and you're in a fucking red hot room.
I mean, I'm fortunate to do a lot of shows with Nerdist and then at UCB. But I love the store. It's not that I gave up on it. It's just talking about working smart. You know, I was putting in what I thought was a lot of time, and I wasn't getting things out of it that I thought were helping my career. Like, it was fun. You know, I got to hang out with a lot of friends, and I don't regret the time I spent there, but I thought, I also wasn't putting in as much time as some other people were that could devote, you know, 6 nights a week, close the place down, be there all the time, and really put in that time and see those dividends. So for me, I kind of realized I'm not getting better as a comic, which is what I want to be,
right,
by being here. So I looked like, where can I go work on this craft? And I think it kind of goes back to, you know, the Sarah Silverman tweet you said, where it was, I could sit here and hang out, which is great in a very valid way to make it. Networking is super important. Or I could just go work on my craft and become undeniable.
That's it.
And so instead of spending, you know, 6-7 hours, this is the decision I made. I'm not saying it's the right one. But instead of spending 6-7 hours at the store 2 to 3 nights a week, I went and I get up, you know, at 6-7 different spots and work on my jokes.
Yeah.
And then do my big shows. I've been fortunate to be accepted in the alt scene. Which sounds so the alt scene,
yeah.
And other venues, and it just keep progressing. But there are other people that have spent a lot of time at the store that are seeing great dividends from that.
Yep.
And so there's no right or wrong way. It was just, yeah, for me, trying to figure out where can I put in my time to become the best comic I can be, because that's the goal.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's like I always tell people, it's like, if you see me at the store, I've already done 3-4 spots. If I'm hanging out there, my night's over.
Right, right.
Now I'm relaxing.
Right.
Talking to people, hanging with friends. But right. There's no fucking way am I going there if I'm not doing a spot, like, and just sit there all night.
Yeah.
That's the wrong flavor of like people think, well, if I just sit here all night, every night, eventually I'll get on. It's not how it works, because if you do get on and you're all rusty and fucking haven't been on in a while, you're going to eat dicks.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so show your face all over the place and figure out who you're, you know, where you fit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I love Meltdown. I don't go on there. Doesn't matter. I still go because that's a show I'd go watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not about like, well, they don't put me on. Fuck them. No way. I want to support. That's a fantastic show.
Oh, yeah, the Wednesday show, the Meltdown.
It's a fantastic room, and the people there are very supportive. So, hell yeah, I'm going to pump that.
Yeah.
You know, do I get a spot? No, I don't care. It's not about that.
Right.
It's about art being done, and if that was gone, that would be a bummer.
Sure, yeah.
You know, so you got to look at things in different frame of mind. Like, people, I think they always look like, what can I get out of this? It's like, just watch and enjoy. And, you know, and if you don't get on, then go somewhere else.
Well, I think your statement earlier about, you know, there are, whatever it is, 100 people, 1,000 people, 1,000,000 people in LA trying to get famous. And I think for a lot of people, that's true. And I think that's the problem.
Yep.
I have a young daughter. So I, you know, I'm at the park with her playing. And there was this other kid, maybe 7 years old. I don't know. He was running around. He had a t-shirt on that said, "When I grow up, I want to be." And then it said, "An engineer, a doctor, a lawyer, a musician," and they were all crossed out and then written in like faux marker, you know, it's a t-shirt, but like meant to look like marker at the bottom. It says famous and that's checked. And I just wanted to grab this kid and be like, motherfucker, famous isn't something you be. It's something you become by being a doctor, a lawyer, a musician, an engineer.
That's right.
And there's this fame epidemic where it's people want, oh man, I've been doing comedy 5 years and I haven't been on TV yet. Well, okay, are you doing this to be on TV?
Yeah.
Like, there was a great... and
the fuck are you doing?
Exactly. And I'll misattribute this quote. I apologize if this is the wrong person, but I believe it was Dustin Hoffman who was on an Inside the Actors studio. And James Lipton asked him, you know, what would you do if you weren't a successful actor? And without missing a beat, he said, you know, that's easy. I'd be an unsuccessful actor.
Yeah.
Like, I'm an actor. This is what I do. I'm not... famous. I'm not a famous. You know what I mean?
That's right.
And it's just...
Well, here's a perfect example. I'm on the fifth year doing comedy. Every year, I see people and they say, hey, man, you going to do the Montreal showcase? I said, nah. Said, why? Why? Why not? Why? You know what I mean? I'm not ready. You know, if I go to Montreal, I want to be a guy that was like... asked to go and smash it there.
Yeah.
I don't want to fucking, you know, get there, do jokes, and 2 years from now going, man, I went too soon.
Sure.
But everybody's just looking at, okay, I'll go to Montreal, then I'm going to get a TV deal, and then I'll have a sitcom. I won't have to do stand-up anymore. It'll be great. It's like, I'm the opposite.
Right.
Like, I tell Barry Katz, it's like, dude, I want to be the Ron White. You know what I mean? I want to be the Bill Burr. I want to be out there doing theaters, hearing... 2,000 people roar laughter.
Yeah.
I don't care about anything else except making the people laugh. You know what I'm saying? And it blows my mind that people use comedy as like a stepping stone.
Yeah. And I think people oftentimes are trying to rush through. It's hard because I think there are times when you see other people, even if you're an optimistic person, you see your friends or maybe even people you don't necessarily respect their talent, right?
Yeah.
Getting... quote unquote, getting things that Hollywood or the business or industry deems as important. And, you know, I'll admit that sometimes those things frustrate me or get me down, but it's just checking out of that and thinking, you know, they're not taking anything from me. That doesn't affect me at all. All I can do is control what I'm doing and put out the best work that I think I can create and shows that I'm proud of, like the shows, you know, that I do, like Improv versus Stand Up or What's New. It's like, these are things that I believe in, or, you know, like your show, you weren't thinking, you know what? Everyone has a podcast. I need to do a podcast. What can mine be about? Well, I did music. It's like, no, this is a thing that you're super proud of.
Yeah.
That, you know, you enjoy talking about with people, not because, well, okay, I just did a show. I got to go shake 15 people's hands, make sure I mention Let There Be Talk to at least 8 of them, because then my attach ratio is 2% if I pick up.
It's, yeah, like, you never think of that.
Just build things you're proud of and put art into the world and let that be enough. Yeah, you need to eat.
Yep.
But like,
you need to eat, but that's, you know what? I always tell people, I've already made it.
Yeah.
People don't understand. If I can go on every night in this town, yeah, in the big three clubs,
yeah,
and have listeners hit me from South Africa, hey, yeah, checking out Let There Be Talk, a dude from, you know, Germany, whatever, man, I've already made it.
Yeah.
Like, people, like, anything after this is just like, oh, really? Yeah. You know? Because, like we were talking before we turned the podcast on, I'm not fucking working. My other options are this. Maybe working at Guitar Center.
Yeah.
You know, selling guitars or construction. No way am I going to do that. I have no other skills. I've performed all my life.
Yeah.
So, yeah, guitar sales, motorcycle sales. I did that before. That's my only other option.
Yeah.
So that's not an option to me.
Right.
You know, so I've already made it. Every day when I'm not looking at the shitty guys that I used to work with,
yeah,
like this one fucking guy that would just sit around and do nothing, and then, you know, the boss, like, lets him do whatever he wants. Yeah, I remember working a job, and I was the only guy busting my ass. It's the same way I do comedy. It would be, yeah, the same way I work a job.
Yeah.
I don't have the slacker in me. It's weird. Because I think because I had a shitty stepdad that just went to the track and drank booze and shit.
Yeah.
I hated him so much. I never want to be that guy.
Right.
So, you know, I remember talking to the boss one time. I go, dude, why don't you fire these other three guys? I'm doing all the work. And he's like, the next three guys will suck. Right. I just got lucky with you. And I go, you're a cocksucker. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
If that's the case, give me more money. Because they're getting the same as me. And they're just smoking weed, texting, and looking at internet porn.
Yeah.
Which is weird, you know? So I have a hard time with people that don't work hard. And sure, that's why I love you. And most of the people I have on, or not most, all of them, I respect
except
in a way.
Except for that one guy, but we won't mention.
That one guy, yeah. Yeah. Oh,
we
yeah
all know that one episode.
Yeah, that one episode, yeah. 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 People are like, what episode now? It doesn't exist. It's just like, but yeah, you know, people that don't work hard, you work hard, which is amazing, man. And I think that, let's say, I immediately get a show. I know I'm going to bring some guys on that work hard. I got to get these guys on. They're working hard. I put you on a show, or Biddlecomb, or now I put Dan Madoni on. He's fun. You know, Nick Youssef works hard. All these guys work hard, and it's like, fuck it. These are the guys doing the shows.
Yeah.
And then I think the great thing about that is the people that are slacker won't ask me. They're like, ah, I better not ask him because I'm, you know.
That's funny.
But you work hard. Let's bust into your thing. You're from Houston.
Yep.
Did you start comedy out there?
I mean, I wish I had that short distilled answer. Technically, yes, but I say I started in San Diego. I did my first show ever. I was in law school in Houston, and Dustin Diamond, who people know as Screech from Saved by the Bell, was doing a college tour, and he was coming to University of Houston, which is where I was going to law school, and they were looking, all along the tour, he was looking for local openers, basically, I think, because he wanted to sell tickets, right? If I get a local college kid to open for me, that's 100 tickets. Yeah,
that's how it works.
Yeah, right. So I told all my friends, we were studying in the law library, it's like, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm going to audition.
Yeah.
And that was the thing that got me to do it, because they held my ass to the fire, and they're like, hey, that thing's tomorrow, you're doing it, right? And so I went to this audition, and I got it.
What were you doing? Just crowd work or?
No, well, so my audition, it's weird. For whatever reason, I always kept like a little journal, but it wasn't a diary. Looking back at them, it's mostly things that I think are like sitcom beats,
yeah,
but just things I thought were funny. I don't know why. I would never had thought about doing stand-up, but I just kept this thing and I would write it down. And it was things like, this is an really early one where it was, my mother-in-law gave us 4 pieces of silver when we got married. and said, don't worry, you know, told my wife, don't worry, you'll get the rest of it is left for you in my will. And when she told me that, I told my mother-in-law, oh my God, that's so generous. I can't wait until we get the rest of the set. And like, you know, implying that she dies. Yeah. I don't know why, but whenever that was like 10 years ago and I wrote that down, I was like, that's so, I was probably watching Friends and I was like, that sounds like something Ross would say.
Oh God.
So I had this book of, you know, let's be honest, there were bad jokes, of course, right?
Yeah.
But I auditioned with that and I had them on cue cards. Like it was like a late night monologue type thing. Like a
yeah. Fan,
and I got the spot for whatever reason. And then because Friends came out, because, you know, I'm in law school there and I went to undergrad at Rice also in Houston. So they came out. So it was a friendly audience, but it was still a big turnout. And I was supposed to do 8. And I ended up doing 20.
Whoa, 20?
Yeah, which is I don't have it recorded. I'm sure it wasn't great.
Wow, but why did you do 20?
Because Dustin, I don't know, I wasn't there.
He was out doing a little toot.
A little allegedly, you know, had a hard time getting out of his hotel room to come
down.
I love
that.
So I didn't know what it meant, but I see the, you know, the host doing the sign like stretch it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I go, what? And he goes, keep going. And I was
oh,
like,
no.
So I did 20. It went very well. Like it wasn't, I'm not saying I was good.
Right.
But it went well.
It felt good.
Right. And
like friendly, you get the bug, right? You go, all
right. Right.
I'm in.
And it was probably helped by the fact that Dustin didn't do that well.
Oh, wow.
Like he might be a great stand up now. I don't know. But at the time I felt like he, you know how Bob Saget is clean on TV, but his stand up is dirty.
Love that.
But hilarious. Like he's a hilarious stand up. Dustin Diamond, I think, was just doing shock stuff, but it wasn't funny. It was just like vaginas are cunts. Like there's no joke there. It's just like, you know me as Screech, but I'm gross.
Shit tastes terrible.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So I did that set in 06, but then I didn't do another set for probably a year.
Well, because you're in law school. Right? Right,
and then I was practicing law, so I went to like one open mic every year. And I was like, this is fun. So that's when my very first set. But then I moved to San Diego, and I kind of had that bug, and I would go to like one open mic.
Where are we going? Like La Jolla Comedy Store?
I would go to the La Jolla Comedy Store. There was this place called the Comedy Co-op that's no longer around that was in San Diego. And then this place, Winston's in Ocean Beach, that had a mic every Friday. And I would go to one of those maybe every 3 to 4 months.
What kind of guys were you into?
That's the weird thing, too. Until I started doing stand-up, I wasn't a big fan of stand-up. Like, I always liked it, but I didn't seek it out.
Wow.
You know, like Bill Cosby, I'd always listen to because I was in Texas. I feel like everybody had a Bill Hicks album. You had to. I think you come up in Texas, if you're around, you listen to Bill Hicks.
Yeah.
And I really liked Seinfeld and then Adam Sandler, you know, as my age, I'm in my 30s, like they're all gonna laugh.
No Chris Rock or anything like that?
So I love it.
Yeah.
Just not before I started doing comedy. Which is weird. I agree that I think it's weird. I'll be the one to say it's weird. But
that is weird, right?
I didn't seek it out.
Yeah, but I mean, I understand that because like I was heavily into comedy in the 70s as a little kid. My buddies had the records. And then in the 80s, I started really liking comedy because of Dice and Kinison and that whole thing was hitting. And then I went away from it for a long time. Then Chris Rock, and Seinfeld. I saw them live and I was into it. But it would come and go for me. It wasn't like every week I was like, who's the new guy?
Right.
Because I was doing rock and roll and shit. And it'd be something you listen to on the bus or in the van or whatever you were in, you know?
Right.
So I understand that. You know, it's like once you get in, then you want to seek all the different styles. You want to understand the whole craft and everything, the history of it. And, you know, and you get into it.
Right. So, I started transitioning out of law and into stand-up. And my wife is and was at the time just very supportive. She was like, you want to do this? You're not getting any younger? Do it.
Yeah.
So I
you got like the trifecta. You got a great wife. She's got a great job and she's hot.
Yeah.
You got like you actually like when people go like you ever getting married? I go, no, unless it was Spicer's style wife. Like if she had a twin sister or something. You know what I mean?
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm very fortunate. I locked that shit down early.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys were lovers in high school?
Yeah, we've been together since our junior year of high school.
Now was she crazy. Your first?
But she's the first and only woman I've had sex with.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That is amazing.
I don't recommend it, but like, yes. I mean, it worked
out
great.
Now, what about her? Was she a virgin?
Yeah.
Wow.
We were like 16. I know some people have sex before that, but it's like, Yeah. Like, we started dating so young, and it was just...
It's crazy that you know one vagina.
It is crazy. I agree.
It's actually kind of cool. I as evil as I am,
yeah.
I do like that world too.
Sure.
I don't know, because I think it's because I come from such a busted up home, you know? Like, wow, that's really cool. Do you watch porn?
Not really. That's, I mean, I've seen it. I had a friend in college that used to watch a bunch of porn, but he would honestly watch it for the plot. Like, the irony plot. Of it. So we'd sit down and watch porns, but we'd skip through most of the sex just because, you know, people, it's like you watch like Mystery Science Theater, you watch like bad movies.
Yep.
What we did in college, my sophomore year, is we watched porn because if
you weren't sitting there getting a boner, like, hey, fast forward to the porn part.
Not, well, one, because it was like four dudes in a room together, which I guess some people do that, but if you can control your boner, unless you just have to pop one off. I recommend it. Like, don't go to like a U-porn. Get a real porno.
Yeah, like those 70s and 80s ones. Yeah,
and watch it, and just watch the story, because, you know, God bless them. They did a story.
Yeah.
There's a story there.
It's always the same one. The guy's bringing the pizza.
Right, yeah, yeah,
or
yeah.
Or the pipe's broken in the back, or the fence is down, and then the music comes on. And then the dick comes out.
Yep.
And then she's sucking it.
Yeah.
That's a great movie.
Our favorite line. I'll still quote to this day. I'll quote it right now. But it was a gardener, right? And then an older woman seducing him. And she comes in, she's like, oh yeah, my bush needs to be trimmed. And my field needs to be plowed. And he goes, I can help with the bush, but I think the field might need someone else. And then his buddy walked in.
Oh,
and
no. It's just like,
if you watch this thing, if you watch this from like a story perspective, like there's no, that, you know, like Save the Cat is a early screenwriter's book for like basic beats of Hollywood movies. And like, if you watch these movies for their plot or for their story, like this friend was never referenced. You never know his back. You don't know who he is, but he's like, that field might be too much for one man to handle. Then this other dude walks in, but the gardener and this other dude, they clearly know assuming the story, I know this is ridiculous, but
there's no backstory on this guy.
Right, but
are they old friends? Did he meet him at a truck stop? Was he at a gas pump and said, hey, I'm going to fuck a lady, jump in the ride? What is it?
Exactly, exactly. And so that's the beauty of watching these movies. Maybe go have sex with your girlfriend or masturbate or do whatever you need to do. And then, I kid you not, watch these things for those purposes and like pick it apart the way nerds, I'm a nerd, the way I would pick apart Captain America.
Yeah.
Like, well, the movie's great, but where did this character, watch it for that. It's so fucking funny.
I'm so funny. I'm such a architect and interior freak and everything. I'll look at the porn for a little bit and then I'll be like, oh, is that a shag carpet? You know, I remember one porn I was watching in the background. It had one of those old clock radios. It looked digital, but they were flaps.
Remember
those? Floop.
Yeah, yeah.
Floop. And I was like, man. And then in my mind, I was drifting off like, God, those are cool. I wonder if there's one on eBay. And then I wasn't even watching the porn. I was on eBay. Yeah. Looking up Flap Clock or whatever it was called.
You mean Fap Clock?
Yeah, yeah. But it was, man, porn. So you guys get married.
Yep.
And you move to San Diego.
Yep.
She's a nurse?
Physician.
And then you, you're a lawyer.
Yep.
You're an actual lawyer working at a firm.
Yep.
And you say, fuck it, I'm going to do stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Which I love this story.
Yeah.
So you're walking away from some pretty good money.
Yeah.
What kind of money are we talking?
So this is, it's old, so you can adjust it for inflation in your head. When I came out of law school, I'm very fortunate, and I worked for some of the largest law firms in the world. And so when I came out of law school, I graduated at the top of my class. I like you. If I'm going to do something, I'm going to fucking do it. So I came out of law school as a first-year law student. I was a first-year associate. I think I was making $175.
Wow.
Which is insane.
That's like, some listeners like, that's not a lot of money, $175.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
That's $175,000 a year, probably take home about $120 after taxes. You know?
Yeah, and there's obviously school loans and debt and other things. It's not just like you're swimming in a bag of money, but I've always lived frugally. It's the same thing we were talking about, you know, off mic more so, but like minimalizing your life. And it's always kind of been, I don't know if in the back of my head I knew I was going to do something stupid and give that up and become a comic, but we were putting a lot of that away.
Yeah.
So I was very fortunate that I looked and was like, you know what? We don't need money.
Yeah.
Not this no one needs that much money.
I'm reading I don't want to interrupt you, but I'm reading the new Artie Lang book. I'm about to open for him in a couple weeks at Nokia. I love Artie Lang. When I first started comedy, I was reading his first book, and I was like, God damn, this guy, you know, what a maniac. So the second book is all about Dave Attell tells him, he says, look, man, you know, Artie Lang's making $1 million a year at Stern, and then he's making $75,000 a weekend doing comedy.
It's crazy.
He's not taking any time to himself.
Yeah.
He's nonstop addicted to the money.
Yeah.
And Dave Attell tells him, and this is great, it's in chapter 2. If you get the book, read it. It's incredible. It's blowing my mind, this book already. I just got it. I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
Dave Attell told him, he said, look, man, you're addicted to drugs, hookers, whatever. That's all evil and fine. But once you get addicted to money, you're over.
Yeah.
And Artie Lang said, I don't know what this guy's talking about. To me, it's all about, like, I'm winning. My dad didn't make fucking $70,000 in a year, and I made it in a weekend.
Yeah.
And then he realized what Dave Attell was talking about, because he said Dave Attell was about to sign TV deals to make crazy money and backed off like, nah, I know what that's going to do. And man, it just fucking opened my eyes. I keep feeling like I'm getting these fucking pointers, but like magically from the art universe.
Yeah.
Like, I swear, like the Sarah Silverman tweet. To most people, that's probably just another tweet by her. But to me, it's like, boom.
Yeah.
This Artie Lang chapter, it's like, boom, how much do you need?
Yeah.
And then I started thinking, you know, if I just had probably $4,000 a month, I would feel rich.
Right.
That is $1,000 a week. Who the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
And before, I'd made thousands a week playing music or whatever. You're thinking like, now, you know. And then I'm like, well, $1,000 a week, that's really all I really need is about $3,000 a month.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? If I got rid of all this shit in here and just did the podcast and comedy, I'm going to be way happier.
Yeah.
Than I am like, well, I got all these items, but I've got to pay bills.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to, you know, shit on people that are out there hustling and making money. Nor am I saying...
Me either.
Am I implying that I'm not very fortunate? Like, yes, I worked hard, but I was very fortunate. My parents were very supportive of me, you know, growing up. And I had... A lot of times people say they attribute all of their success to themselves. Like, I did. I worked hard, but I also had friends and networks that helped me along the way. Like, you know, we're nothing without our support system.
Oh, God,
so
yeah.
They get tons of the credit. And I realize there are probably people listening that, you know, might think I'm a jerk because who walks away from that much money? That's all they want. And I get that. I understand it. And I'm very fortunate to have been able to make that much in a year so that I could be comfortable saving some and then walking away from it.
Well, you're only going to understand that walking away is if you're an artist like you or I. You know what I'm saying? Or anybody that's doing art. Anybody else, that's the goal. You went to school. You got a great job. And now you're making money. But It's like you or I, you go, well, I'm not happy though.
Right. And I wish nothing more. Like, I have friends that are still practicing. And I you know, I wish nothing more than that I was happy doing that. Like, I didn't go to law school in the hopes that I'd eventually quit. It just didn't satisfy me. And I think, you know, life is too short to be doing something. Like, I looked at my partners at the firms I was at. And it wasn't like, just hang in there. You know, I wasn't like the little kitty on the motivational poster. Like, hang in there. Two more years of this, you'll be here, and then you'll be happy. I just didn't see happiness.
Yeah, it's like Wolf of Wall Street.
Well, you that's happy, because that's a lot of drugs.
Yeah, but if you watch that movie,
right,
you see, it's just like Breaking Bad or any movie or TV show that deals with greed, and I'm not saying your lawyer thing was greed, but what deals with a lot of money, you start getting into that, I need more.
Yeah.
And I need more, and I need more. And then you never enjoy what you have because you're working so much. Yeah, I'm working 7 nights a week as comedy, but that's different.
See, I don't know if that's this is great because this is what I wanted to get into.
Yeah.
I don't know if it is. I don't know if I think you have just traded one addiction for another, because I look at like Louis C.K. I love Louis C.K. Yep. Pretty much everything he does, I think, is
my
gold.
Favorite. Yep.
But I don't. It's like, would I want his life? I don't know, because I think his comedy comes from truth, and it seems like he's unhappy a lot. People are like, oh man, Eddie Murphy hasn't put out an album in years. He sucks, or Eddie Murphy isn't funny anymore. He's just an idiot. It's like, I think, and I don't know either one of these individuals personally,
right?
But it's almost like it's not hard to imagine that, no, Eddie Murphy has just become happy, so he doesn't feel the need to be out there. Like, he broke the addiction.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas Louis is still in... He's a creative genius, but he's still in that addiction. And so am I, and so are you. So I don't know. I think I gave up money and corporate addiction for this other thing where now it's like you hustle for respect.
Yeah.
You hustle. Like, yeah,
that is true.
I don't need the money, but I want to be able to walk into any club in America and have them be like, oh, shit, Spicer's here.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, you got 10 minutes for sure. Get up there. And
it's more about, to me, about... As weird as this sound is, I want to be a smasher.
Right, and is that more narcissistic than wanting money?
It's
because
not
that's all about it, you.
It's really not. No, it's not in a narcissistic way. It's not where I want to be like I'm the best. It's more of the journey of how do you get to be that funny?
Okay,
that's what I'm talking about. The comfort, like when I read Artie Lang's book, this guy is talking about fucking hookers in Amsterdam shooting heroin, and it's like he's on TV. He doesn't give a fuck. And they're going, hey dude, you got this in this book. I want to get to that level of honesty and being able to be completely funny by just not your classic setup, but you know, your one-liners or whatever, but yeah. Like, this is how I see things.
Sure.
And is it funny, you know? So it's not like it's not an ego thing of like, I want to smash. It's, I want to find out how you get to that level, which I know is a lot of time and a lot of work. So that's what I'm doing, you know?
It's not an ego thing that you want to smash. It's an ego thing like you need to smash.
Yeah. I need to smash. No. I just enjoy it as much as they're laughing crazy hard. I enjoy that. And it goes back, I really think, to that junior high of hanging out with 3-4 buddies and tell them a story at the locker during lunch and they're all dying. That platform of making them feel good. I like that. There's something about it that I like, people feeling good.
It's called a sickness.
It is a sickness. It is. It really is, man.
Yeah.
I think right there to the junior high, the three guys, there they are. This guy, Sean Gibbs, this other guy, Jack Delfino, and another guy, you know, just sitting there and we're just fucking laughing at stuff I'm saying.
Yeah. Do you know what those guys are doing now?
Those guys, one builds motorcycles, which is cool. That's awesome. An art thing. And the other one is electrician, which he always wanted to be, like a blue-collar guy.
And see, that's great. That's what I was saying. Like, I wish, like, my father-in-law, you know, was a chemical engineer. He's recently retired. And, you know, there was a time in my life where I was very, I think, selfish or more narrow-minded. And I was like, man, I don't want to be like that. But, no, I would have loved to have been like that, because he loved getting up in the morning and going and being a chemical engineer.
Yep.
And that's great. I wish nothing more. And anyone listening, if you love your job and you have a 401k and health insurance, God bless you, man. I wish nothing more than that. I loved getting up in the morning and going and working 9 to 5. I know there is no such thing as a 9 to 5, a 7 to 6.
Yeah. 7 to 7.
Yeah. Day job in an office.
Plus commute, right. 7 to 10.
Right. But you have the podcast to listen to. Like I wish that's awesome. It's all about, and it sounds so dumb, but it really is all about happiness and then balancing that with doing enough to be a responsible citizen and then enough to provide for yourself so that you're happy. But really, when you look at it, you don't need that much.
Yeah.
And it's so easy to get caught up in, like, you know, I love video games. And it's like, oh, this video game's coming out, or I need a PS4 or whatever. And then, but balance that stuff out with what you need to do to be happy and then what you need to do to sustain yourself and to be a good person.
Yeah.
And once you get past that, you know, that's gravy. It's just...
I understand my addictions. You know what I mean? Like, I was addicted to booze and coke. But I can quit them.
Yeah.
So I quit them. you know, then you get, and I recognize the evilness of it. And that's how I looked at comedy, is like, I got to fix myself. So I go long ways, because my addiction is, look at that, I got to have that. And then I work my ass off and I get it. And then while I get it, I don't enjoy it.
Yeah.
I'm already looking at the next thing, like, oh, well, they make this one now and then that one. So my new frame of thought is, all right, fuck it. Get rid of everything and just take art all the way to the fullest. Have a few items you love. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the weirdness of a couple pairs of jeans, some t-shirts, some boots, your computer, a motorcycle, a watch, my records.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And of course, art. I mean, I got art in my house. I got to have art. But other than that, man, I don't, you know.
Yeah.
I don't need to be a homeowner. So to bring it back to that, as the Airstream went by, it was a real small one.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I went on the internet right away. My dream would be to buy an old piece of land up here under the Hollywood sign where a guy's pad burned down or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Drop this small one-man Airstream on it with a cool carport where I could park my bikes, like something covered, and something where I could eat, you know, like outdoor barbecue. And then that's it.
Yeah.
That's what I live in, man.
Yeah. And there are people that have done that. I mean, if you look on the internet, you know, people have converted, you know, really small, basically like like containers.
Yeah.
Like shipping containers.
Oh, those are great. I've seen those shipping container homes.
Yeah.
I love all that. I read Dwell Magazine. There's guys that, if you Google them, Frank Lloyd Wright graduates, they did a contest where they took five guys and said, build the smallest, dopest house you could. And they're like the size of this living room.
Yeah.
But they were so fucking cool. You know, and I think it really comes down to me being born in Yosemite.
Yeah.
As much as it, the weirdness of it, it's, you don't know when you're a child what's going into you.
Yeah.
But really, the hippie of like the land and this beautiful area is what I'm into.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think, yeah, there are some great prefab homes that are available now that, you know, are a little more structure than like an Airstream or something, but are small and reasonably priced and, you know, green, quote unquote green, self-sustaining, whatever. And it's just so cool to think about, you don't need, how much more space do you need? And you put that somewhere and it's paid for and you're not living in debt. And
yeah.
It's just like,
debt is the evil of art.
Yeah.
You know, that was the first thing I did when I started comedy. I did that Ice Cube movie and I paid off my credit card.
Yeah.
Cut it all up and said, okay, never again will I get a card. I have one to get flights or rental cars and stuff, but it maxes out, you know, at $2,000. It can't go over that. But if you have debt, and I always tell people this, like the way I started was, all right, I'm going to get rid of this debt. You got to get rid of that debt if you want to really start living.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And everybody goes, well, you know, you got to have debt. I can't get out of debt. I'm hooked. Fuck it, man. Walk away from the debt. If you got a bankrupt or whatever, it's your health.
Yeah.
You made mistakes.
Yeah.
Get rid of the debt and start over. But don't do the classic and get back into debt.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, it is an interesting podcast because it's like, the reason I like to talk to you about it is because you and I, a lot of comics, what people don't understand, the audience, we don't just sit around and talk comedy.
Yeah.
Like you and I, you know, like, or Kevin Christie and I talk watches. You and I would talk cars. You love old Porsches.
Oh, yeah.
You used to have one.
Yeah.
Do you miss your Porsche?
I do. It's one of those things where I want another one, but I don't need it. But I love, like, Byron Bowers is a fantastic comic. People listening, he did.
Yeah, he was just on Pete Holmes. If you want to see him, great guy. I was on with him last night.
Yeah, he's amazing.
He's a Porsche freak. Also, he and I go to the car show every year together.
Yeah, and I love the idea of having an old car that I can work on and stuff or whatever. But right now, yeah, so I sold my Porsche and I got a Prius, and now it's just kind of hard for me to imagine owning any other car.
Yeah.
Because, and I realize how douchey that sounds, but it's great, man. Like, I'll go on the road and do shows, and I'll get 60 miles to the gallon.
Well, it's a tool.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like you're a plumber. You've got this crescent wrench, your pipe wrench you need. That's what the Prius is.
Right.
The Porsche is just your appreciation of fine things.
Right.
Which a lot of people don't understand. I mean, whatever you like, but to me, like an old car, you know, I look at cars every day. I look at watches every day. I look at motorcycles every day. Even a fine pair of jeans, how it's made, whatever. Yeah. That car, that Porsche, man, the history of it, how the company started, where they're made, how they're fucking still around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All the odds are against you. You're a small company in Germany. You know what I mean? You're making cars that are basically Volkswagen engines.
Well, they got, I don't know how much of a Porsche guy you are, but I mean, they got fucked recently because arguably they tried to get too big. So they, you know, were still independently owned and they made a move after Volkswagen and they went kind of all in. And again, this is funny too, because it goes back to talking about debt. And they overextended themselves trying to leverage and buy out other car companies. And in the process, they opened themselves up to weakness. And in that overextension of what they were trying to do, they got bought. Because their shares went down. I might have some of these facts wrong, but you can look it up.
Yeah.
They got bought, and now Volkswagen owns them.
That's unbelievable.
Which is great, because it was like this thing. They were huge, right? So profitable with everything they did, and whoever the CEO was or, you know, controlling an interest at the time, they were trying to get overly ambitious, and it's like, dude, do the thing you do.
Yeah.
Just do the thing you do and be successful. But they're like, oh, we have this play. We can do it. And they went out on this limb, and the fucking branch fell, and they still, you know, are making great products, obviously, but it's an interesting case study. I'm sure there's a great business course on, you know, what happened to Porsche. Whenever that was, probably in 2010, 2011, right, that happened.
Some of the greatest cars ever made.
Oh,
you know,
I love them.
You know what I like about Porsche, and it's like what I like about Slayer or okay, or the Ramones.
Yeah.
Those, that fucking 911.
It's iconic.
Is the same car right now.
Yeah.
At the shape.
Yeah.
It's incredible that now they recently just came, brought back the Targa.
Yeah.
I love the Targa more than any car.
Yeah.
I'm a speed freak, so I would want the 4S.
Sure.
But the Targa, I had this chick, she was my sixth grade teacher. She had a root beer 70s Targa, Mrs. Foster. I still don't know how the fuck she paid for this thing back in the 70s, man, yeah, you know, or whatever. So they reissued the car this year.
Yeah.
And they were going to, the vents on the back are useless. They don't need those vents anymore. You know what I mean? There's like air vents.
Right. It's not air cooled anymore.
Right. Yeah. But they kept them to keep the look.
Yeah.
Which I love. You know what I mean? So it's amazing how they, I love that company that sticks with their history. Sure, they've got the Cayenne and they've got that Panera or whatever.
Yeah,
I Panamera. Love that car.
Now,
you don't
each
like
to,
it?
Each to their own. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, no, right, yeah, right. Well, I like it is if it's four of us going to San Diego.
Oh, yeah.
We're in this fucking cockpit.
Right.
Like beautiful machine just boom.
Right, yeah.
With great sound and stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's of course, it's not the Porsche I'm going to buy first, but would I have it? Hell yeah.
Right, which is funny because we're both talking about like living within your means.
Yeah.
Not being debt. So like for me, the next time I would get a car like that would be if I'm fortunate enough to, again, in my pursuit of art and being happy and doing what I do, have that money. But like recently, you know, I had a pretty good year last year, comedy entertainment wise. And the first thing that, and I'm not saying you need to do this or anyone else needs to do this, but the first thing I did with it is after I kind of paid off my comedy expenses and paid for some flights and upcoming trips I have this year, like I know I'm going to New York this summer and some of these shows I have coming up, is I gave a bunch of money to St. Jude's because
right,
children's cancer research is super important to me. And I could have put that away to be like, this is future Porsche funds. But again, it goes back to that.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. So I'd love to own one again one day, but I'm not, that's not a goal.
Yeah.
I'm not focused on, okay, you know, when I was little, I had a shoebox when I found out that a Street Fighter 2 was coming out for the Sega Genesis and it was going to be like a $70 or $80 game. I took this shoebox and I taped it shut and I cut a slit in it and every dime I got, I put in there to save up for that. And I'm still doing that, but I'm doing it, I'm saving for other things, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saving for my Porsche. I'm saving for my daughter's college, for making the world a better place. And God, I'm so sorry. I know I live in LA and I drive a Prius and I'm saying this hippie shit. But
yeah, well, you know, but hey man, I'm all for that kind of stuff. I always wonder though, where does the money go? Do you know where that money goes?
Well, right. I mean, I think,
because I mean, let me tell you, let's talk a little bit about cancer because it's amazing. It's the scariest thing to me. Cancer and heart attacks. Everything else, if you die, you die. You know what I mean? That's
sure,
how it goes. But cancer, And I really, really starts to freak me out lately, heart attacks and cancer, because a lot of rock stars are dying of cancer. They're going. But a lot of guys are dying at fucking like 50 and 40. Dudes we know right now in the scene. So I know for a fact billions and billions of dollars have been donated to cancer. Now, there's always that saying, and I hear this a lot. Guys go, oh, well, they'll never cure cancer because there's so much money in it, like AIDS.
Sure.
Now, I understand that frame of mind. But if you're Bill Gates or say, Warren Buffett, and they give tons of money. Now, if that's the case, there would be guys that would contact Gates and go, look, no one wants to cure it. We really have the cure. Let's set up our own center in like Seattle.
Yeah.
And we say, look, we're tired of pharmaceuticals dominating the cancer world.
Right.
And shutting down just like the gas, the water car or the electric car or any of that. You can get cured of cancer. It's curable. It's here. Just show up in a weekend. It's gone or whatever.
Right.
What I'm saying is, where is all this money? And fucking people are dying. I think people die more now than they did. I mean, my grandma smoked till she was like 1,000. Let's just say you've heard that one, right?
Yeah.
Guys, 100 years old, they're smoking and drinking, and then they died like 110. No one goes to 110 anymore. A lot of it is this shit food, and a lot of it's the water, and the repercussions of the Japan. I just saw that on 60 Minutes. Every day, like 120,000 gallons of toxic waste they're pumping out of there still now. You never hear about it anymore. That's going right in the ocean right here. And, you know, we're eating sushi. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So what do you think, as you give that money up, do you feel like it's really going to do something? I'm just asking because you still are an artist.
Right.
And the money, you know, you give that money and you hope, I hope really something this changes.
Yeah, and I think before you give to a charity, I think it's good to, you know, as best you can, vet that charity and see where that money is going. I mean, that's Invisible Children got a lot of shit. They had their Kony 2012 campaign, and people looked at their breakdown for how they spent their money, and I don't know the numbers, but it was arguably a small percentage actually went to that cause, whereas a large percent of it was their media and creating new films, which you can argue is helping the cause because they create those videos that become so successful that help them continue their cause and give that 10% to the actual, you know, cause and after whatever. But I think it's important to understand where you're going. And for me, you know, St. Jude's, what they do is if, you know, when your kids are there, there are no costs for the family.
That's great.
It allows them to focus on healing. And so a lot of the money is some is to research, but it's also to, with the tools we have right now, giving these families for children with cancer a worry-free environment in place to treat the kids the best they can.
Right.
And I think that there, you know, some conspiracies are probably right, and there's that whole, yeah, could we have cured cancer by now? My personal belief, I mean, cancer, it's tough because it's such a big umbrella term, and every type of cancer is different, right? It's just cells mutating. So you cure cancer, it's hard to do because
so many different cancers,
right?
So many different factors, and everything you just kind of call cancer,
right? And I think to your point, your anecdote about, you know, like your grandma or whatever, you know, I think it's sad with my wife being in medicine. You look at where our life expectancy is compared to other industrialized and Western, quote unquote, Western countries.
Yeah.
And we're not doing as well as they are. Like,
yeah, like Asia, they live to be 100.
And yeah,
they have the most
places in Europe. Yeah. But we are, if you look at the statistics, we are living longer and more fruitful lives now than our grandparents and great grandparents were.
I think it changes every week, too. I just saw a thing yesterday. It said, turns out fatter people live longer, not obese.
Right.
Not obese, but heavier people, because they can battle sickness and stuff, which is crazy. You know what I mean?
Was this article on DeanDelRay.com?
As soon as I read that, I was like, well, I can have this piece of pie. I mean, I understand stupid stuff. Yeah, I understand stuff. I had Rick Ingram on. He broke down diabetes.
Yeah.
And I was really like happy that he did, because I know everything about Van Halen record. I don't know anything about the body.
Right.
And when my body broke down, when I got that prostatitis from my motorcycle,
yeah,
I was like, you start to get these things like, whoa, man, your body don't work. You don't work. As far as a comic, I don't have any health care and I don't have any retirement. And, you know, that's the scary part.
Yeah.
You know, but healthcare is it's wild, you know, and I think a lot of it comes down to, again, too much items, too much debt, stress. Stress kills you. Yeah, a lot of people believe that you get these fucking stress, it bottles up fucking shit that creates sickness in your body.
Yeah,
I believe that.
Sure.
I don't think that's hippie shit. I think it's I think it's spiritual. If your core is good, you're gonna be a lot healthier.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there's a lot to it. Unfortunately, I don't think we know the answers. That's why bring again back to the Airstream and back to kind of where we started. I think it's really important to do what you love doing and to focus on being happy without being without that being a detriment to other people, right?
Yeah.
All you want to do is be happy. Well, then, yeah, we're all killing people and we're all doing cocaine all the time.
Yeah,
and it's the best thing.
It's just that fucking video game.
Yeah. Just the Grand Theft Auto
life.
Yeah, you don't want to take it that far, but it's like, do what you can to make yourself happy living in the society in which we live. And it's hard. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and lie and say that there aren't days that I'm not jealous or frustrated or
right.
I go to a club and I don't get up or this. I feel like other people are getting things that I think I should be getting. And I think we all feel that. But whatever profession you do, you know, oh, someone else got this promotion that you thought you deserved. You can only control so much.
Yeah.
And so you and I think are both control freaks over what we can control.
We are control. I am a control freak.
Yeah. And then it's like, work on that and let the rest do your best to let it go.
Yeah.
It's hard. I'm not saying you can do it.
It is hard. You know, I've gotten to the point to where it's like, shitty people don't really bother me anymore. I just, I just try not to look at it like bad material. People that don't try to strive to be better. I just like, yeah, whatever. I just move on. Before, I'd be like, this fucking guy in here, what the fuck, you know?
Yeah.
But fuck it. That's where I get down to, I've got to be funnier.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So that gives you inspiration.
Yeah.
You know, of like, I want to be good. I just want to be good.
Right.
I'm not like it's not an ego thing. I just want to be good. And you do love that feeling of like, man, you smashed it up there.
Yeah.
That's good because you work so hard.
Yeah.
You know, and I always tell people I've never killed. People go, you killed it up there. I go, no. I saw Louis C.K. at the Gibson Amphitheater. I almost had a heart attack on this particular joke. I saw Bill Burr at Largo deliver some of the funniest shit ever. I didn't even hear the rest of the set. So I've never killed, and I probably won't kill.
Sure.
Because in the truth of it, I probably won't be around 20 years from now. You know what I mean? And that's what you need to get great.
Sure.
20 years of fucking... But I want to be great at who I am now.
Yeah.
You know? Which is cool that you didn't fucking give up from the store. You went somewhere else, and you create great stuff. You got a great show. Let's talk a little bit about your shows. You've got the one I love called Stand Up versus Improv.
Improv versus Stand Up.
Yeah, at UCB I did it, and it's also at other places. I love this show. Give them the premise of it.
Sure, yeah. So it's one improv group and 2 to 3 stand-ups, and each comedic discipline does what it does best. So the improv group will go out and do long-form improv, things that you see like UCB used to do. They had their TV show ASCAT, like long-form improv. And then the stand-ups go out and do 8 to 12-minute sets, basically the same amount of time combined that the improv group did of, like, their killer material, right? Like, whatever they want to do. And then, because it's fun, we make them switch roles. So the improv team has to send... This is what we tell them. How each discipline interprets these rules is up to them, because it's just fun.
Yeah, yeah.
So the improv team sends one person out to do, like, 3 to 5 minutes of stand-up. And then we make the stand-ups do 3 to 5 minutes of improv. So I believe the last time we did the show, it was what, you, Crystalia,
Mo Mandel.
And Mo Mandel.
Yeah.
And I love that because, like, you guys are all talented performers, and it's, you know, go fuck up, right?
Yeah,
like, go do something you don't normally do. Test that muscle. And it's fun, like, kind of the inspiration behind the show.
D'Elia was saying I was terrible, and I felt like I was getting the most laughs. I think he was jealous.
Yeah, take that.
I was rocking it up there,
take
man.
Take D'Elia down a peg.
He was like, oh, by the way, you're terrible at improv. I go, what do you mean? I was getting the most laughs.
Well, I'll talk to Mo and Chris and you, and we'll get that same lineup together again. We'll run it again. 2.0.
It was great. I love it, man.
2.0.
I feel that the comic has the advantage.
The stand-up?
I really feel that because a lot of times when you're on stage, you're improvising in between your jokes and your riffing and stuff.
Sure.
So your mind is in that state of mind, unless you're a comic that sticks straight to the book.
Right.
Which most guys don't do that anymore. That's right. Not that world anymore. Whereas the improv guys, I felt that like they're not really doing stand up. The guy they send out just does crowd work.
Sure.
Which is, you know, pretty fucking easy.
Well, I mean, you say that because you do that for a living.
Yeah,
like, crowd work is
easy. Right.
But for them, it's out of their comfort zone oftentimes. But what I love about the show is that, and it still exists now, but when we started it especially, it's like there's this, not even as much a rivalry in the artists, like between like improvisers and stand-ups, but there's almost this weird rivalry in the fans of the discipline where people will be, so a guy that I love, and he just had a Comedy Central, he filmed his Comedy Central half hour, Joe Wengert, is an amazing stand-up and an amazing improviser. And it's like, you know,
that's like me then, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Unless you ask Chris D'Elia. But it's like, you know, people will line up, you know, hours in advance to go see him perform with his improv team, the Smokes, but then like he'll do stand up and they'll be like, well, what is that? It's like, motherfucker, it's the same. It's funny. Like, there's this weird thing where like,
that's ridiculous, right? You're not a fan of the guy, you know, like his work, body of work. That's
just
like
comedy.
Saying, you know what that's saying? That's like saying, well, I like Kiss, but the solo records I don't listen to.
And I'm sure people say that.
I understand that frame of mind. It's, you're only good in the group, dog.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's true.
Eddie Vedder goes on tour solo. I go see it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, right. And it's true in reverse too, where people like, oh, I love stand up, but they've never given improv a chance, and that's fine. You know, you can have your preferences, but what I love about the show is that we get some of the best talent of each discipline together. So whether or not you end up, you leave with a new appreciation for improv or stand up, you've seen great improv and great stand up, and hopefully it brings the community of fans together. And then also even further brings the community of artists together. Because especially here in LA.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's like these people that you're going to be on a TV show with at some point, and you're going to be together, and it's, you know,
what a lot of people don't know is when you're mixing that kind of shit up.
Yeah.
And there's some meetings going on in a TV fucking writer room, and they go, well, we got this one part. What do you guys got any ideas? You go, you know what, man? One time I did this show with this guy. I don't really know him, but he would be perfect for this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so the more you're in different camps,
right,
the better it is for your, not only your, you know, broadening your fucking, your performance and you as a performer, but also broadening your name in different worlds, which is like what we're talking about with you at Meltdown or at the store or anything. When you're in all the worlds, you're just opening up more work for yourself, which is great.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what's cool about the show. And also, that's a room that I don't get to perform in. So when I do it, I go, I love this place.
Yeah.
I love UCB. I love Meltdown. I love those kind of rooms. My new favorite's Virgil.
Yeah.
Now, I went on at Virgil, and I was like, I would shoot a special in here.
Yeah.
This room is fantastic.
Yeah.
Beautiful room, great vibe, cool people. The second room where you can chill and have drinks.
Yeah.
What a fantastic room. And I played music in there in like 96.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so did Jonah Ray, I believe. He's saying.
That's funny.
Yeah, so when you go in a room, you know, 15 years later, you go, man, I actually lived another life in here.
Yeah. What were you doing in the Virgil? You're not an alt comic, bro. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I always say I'm the king of alt comedy because I'm 48. That's an alternative to what most 48-year-olds are doing.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's a great show.
Anyway. And then you've got another show that I did. Now, you can find this show on iTunes. He does a show called at Meltdown. What's it called?
What's New. Or What's new with Christian Spicer might be the full.
It's on iTunes.
Yep. It's a Nerdist podcast on iTunes, wherever you get your podcast.
Yeah. And this is a great show. You come on and you do new material.
Yeah.
And then we go upstairs immediately and you interview us about the material.
Yeah. What I like about it, again, I think that this show only works where comedy is today, because you can be such a fan. Like, comedy is so cool and can be raw. And what I like about it is it's comics. And thank you and everyone that's done the show. Like, I love having people trust me and just the community at large. You put new material out into the world, but what I think makes it cool is in that you get to talk about it. So it's not just, you know, you don't just go on Conan and do new material and then maybe it doesn't work. It's like you do new material, but then you get to talk about, and the audience gets to hear, you know, what Dean's process is. Like, you tell the joke about, I'm making one up, but about the first time you did a wheelie on your motorcycle. Yeah. And then you get to hear the discussion about where that joke came from. Did it work? How are you going to play with it? And it's so three comics will do new material, including myself as the host. And then we all go up and it's, you know, we all chat at the same time, which I love, because, you know, like, you'll start talking about how you write or whatever. And then, you know, Theo Vaughn or whoever else is on the show will say, oh, that's crazy that you do that. I work like this. And you just get this such a diverse range of people's process, and you get to hear it right after they performed. And I'm super proud of the show. I don't think anything like it exists.
Yeah, it's great.
And I think if you're a fan of stand-up, it's awesome insight. If you're not, you know, skip it. That's fine.
I think these shows, like, I do the Neil Brennan new material show. Yeah. I do your show, and I do Jeremiah's...
Stand-up on the spot?
Yeah, stand-up on the spot. I think these shows are funner than any shows I do, because the people in the crowd know that you're probably going to be eating it. So now you have this freedom of, like, all right, yeah, that sucked. Fuck you guys. I'll go on to this. You know what I mean?
Right. They know what they're there for, and they're supportive of it.
So the level, because what a lot of people don't understand is when you're working new material at an open mic, it's just all comics there these days. It's not like, I don't know if you listen to the show in other states and you go to an open mic and there's an audience, but in LA, there's no audience ever.
Yeah.
So this is an actual audience, so it's like a pro open mic.
Yeah.
You know, really is, because you're doing this material the first time or second, third time, and it gives you that feeling of, like, on real people, like, all right, there might be something there.
Right. And what I try to do with what's new, if you come to the live show, to reward the audience, so to speak, is I have a headliner. It's like when we're up in the podcast booth chatting about our new material, there's an amazing comic downstairs doing
polished
material. So the live audience is there to be supportive of the new material, but you also will get to see, you know, TJ Miller or you or whomever, like a great comic,
doing
a long set of killer material. So it's that, it's not just, hey, here, let comics, you know, abuse you. But if you say those shows are your favorite, I will gladly trade you. You can do that show and I'll open for Artie at Nokia.
I don't want you to do a show you don't love. Don't get me wrong. As I open for Artie at Nokia, or I'm opening for Jay Moore at the Fox in Bakersfield.
Yeah.
I know what my goal is. My goal is to, I want to cruise around on a bus and do theaters with a couple buddies of mine around America, like Tosh does.
Yeah.
You know, he brings his buddies out, or you know, Ron White, he's on a jet now.
Yeah.
I was listening to Ron White, and he said that, not Larry the Cable Guy, the other guy.
Jeff Foxworthy?
He said, dude, you can't talk about the money. Because then Ron White gets up there and goes, I got a jet you guys paid for. You know, and he goes, you can't talk about that. You got to be blue cars. I'm like, man, they can see how many tickets we sold. You can't lie to the people. Yeah. You lie to them, they're going to be pissed.
Yeah.
So,
no, they drive their truck around still, and they got one driving and four in the back, and they're living on $20 a day.
And those guys just live, you know, at their parents' house still when they get home. But, I really think there's something badass about doing theaters.
Oh, sure.
Small theaters.
Yeah.
Going around America. I've been around America. I played rock and roll around America. I played these rooms with Wallflowers. These small crates. There's a theater in Montana, in Missoula, Montana. I think it's... Fuck, I forget what it's called. It's the only theater in Missoula, Montana. And that's... one of the most beautiful theaters, and everyone, the whole town came out.
That's awesome.
You know, yeah. Like I was talking to Marin about it, you know, like the whole city comes out and you're like, this is great.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want the whole city to like my material. That would be horrible. But those kind of rooms around America where you drop in, you know, and you just go like, wow, look at this room.
Yeah.
There's been some fucking art done in here, and these people are going to show up and we're going to, hopefully they're going to laugh.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I love the, I do love coming up with new. I think at this point in comedy, after doing a couple thousand spots, I love the mining of the gold.
Okay.
Where I drop something, I go, holy shit. Because you'll have a book of shit.
Right.
And most of it doesn't work. And then something works, you go, fuck, that's working. And it's like panning gold. You start getting the sand out of there, and you go, there's the fucking nice shiny pebbles.
And there's the addiction again.
There's the addiction, yeah. I've been addicted all my life, just to everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What's your addiction?
I mean, definitely comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, I love
video games.
I love video games.
Now, you got a video game podcast?
I do. If you like.
You got like everything. Nice. You're like, I love you. That's right. You're like me. Like, you just, hey, man, we got to just keep working.
Just keep.
Now, you got a video game podcast.
Yep.
And I got to admit, I stopped playing video games after a round game called Tempest.
Yep. Yep.
Love it. At one time, I was making a lot of money, and my house was full of video games. The real ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I had...
like arcade cabinets.
I had Popeye.
Oh, nice.
Which I love, because it's basically Donkey Kong, but with Popeye. And
a Nintendo game, one of the rare Nintendo games.
It's the only game I regret selling. And a matter of fact, if I get some money again, I will own Popeye again.
Yeah.
It's a twisted, weird game. You've got sea hags.
Yeah.
You've got fucking... Brutus, you've got olive oil, you eat spinach, you peep people up. But I loved the games when I was growing up. You know, Defender, yep. Stargate, Tempest, Frogger, Centipede, Dig Dug. Man, I killed on Dig Dug. What else? You know, all those games.
Yeah.
There's a great place in Vegas has the games now. It's called the Pinball Hall of Fame.
I got to get the name right. I think it's a great place. There's a really awesome, like, barcade.
Oh, yeah?
Which is like an arcade bar, like a hip one that just opened in L.A. I'm going to jump on the internet here real quick.
Oh, that's great.
I think it's like 826 or something like that, 826 L.A. And it's... nope, that's funny. I know I have that thought in my head. That's a
great strip joint. You go to
826 LA is a great nonprofit supporting writers.
Oh.
But I'll figure it out. We can keep chatting. But
so they have there's an arcade in town now?
Yeah, downtown. It has like retro games and also like 90s arcade games like Street Fighter. And it's like a hip bar. Like,
oh, I gotta go to that
downtown part of LA. It's pretty badass.
Are they a quarter?
Some are less.
Some are less.
Yeah, it's like they make their money off drinks. You
oh
know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah.
But they're not gouging you on drinks either. It's just a real chul.
I like skee ball.
Sure.
I was recently in a shop in San Fran, and they had a skee ball game in there.
Yeah.
I was like, that's great, man. That'd be a cool game to have in your house. It was a vintage, real one, you know.
Yeah.
I remember, at summertime, I would go to Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk, and my mom would drop me off there, and you'd get a wristband. For like $10, you could ride all the rides, and for another $5, you could play video games all you wanted.
Yeah.
Man, there's nothing better than being at the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk playing video games and riding roller coasters.
Yeah.
That place, fucking life is God.
It's amazing. This place is called 82.
82.
82. It's downtown Los Angeles.
What street?
It looks like it's 706 East 4th Street, I think. But it's down there by Angel City Brewery, and there's
I love that place.
So it's like
Holy shit.
Hip part of downtown.
Angel City Brewery, it is like, if you live in LA, go there. It's one of the coolest venues going. They have comedy there on some night. I've done it. But it's like basically like a clubhouse for adults.
Yeah.
They got beer. It's a brewery, so they're making beer, but they got art.
Yeah.
They've got like motorcycle people there. They've got like rock going. That place is great.
I think the art district downtown LA in general is pretty cool because it has that great cross section of, it's not, and don't get me wrong, you can have fun in Beverly Hills too, but it's like, you know, you have hipsters, you have yuppies, you have locals that have been downtown for forever.
Yep.
And you have artists, and then you have bikers, and it's like this really cool part of LA where everybody can get together and hang out and be chill.
It feels pretty San Francisco to me down in there.
Sure.
When I go in there, I go, this feels like right here I'm in the Mission. So I do like it.
Yeah.
I would never live there. I would live there if they would just get rid of the fucking craziness, man.
Yeah.
Because one block's killer and the next block, man, there's syringes
killer.
On the ground and there's some killers.
Yeah.
And then another problem I have down there is all the stores close at like 8 because they don't want to get robbed.
Right, yeah.
You know, so you can't do anything after 8.
Yeah.
But so what video games are you into? Because to me, I stopped playing video games once I, even like when I was on the tour bus for long rides, I wouldn't play them. I got bored of them because they all seemed to be the same. They were like shoot 'em up games.
Yeah.
Or maze games.
Yeah, they're still, so I kind of play everything. Like I have an Xbox One and a PlayStation 4, which are the newest systems. But I think it's great about video games now, and I'm not saying that you should for sure get back into it, but I do think we're in a golden age of gaming because you have the newest, latest, best.
The shit looks real.
Right.
Let's fucking talk. I saw a driving game when I was at the car show. It's a brand new driving game, I guess, on the Xbox.
There's Forza 5. Looks great.
That fucking guy looked like he was driving in Malibu.
Yeah.
On the canyons, I was like, look at this game. They look fantastic, but who's got the time?
Well, people that don't do comedy.
Yeah, right?
So there are great games like that, but there's this whole indie scene of games. Like, there's a game out right now. It's been out for a while called Spelunky, and you can play it on pretty old computer. It's available on Steam. It's a digital platform to buy games digitally, and it's also on some of these consoles. And it goes back to that old school, hard, difficult, like Mega Man, 2D side scroller, like challenging. And so what I love about gaming now is that you can play the game. You can play Killzone or Titanfall as a shooter that just came out with like, you know, deathmatch and high tech graphics and big mechs that you're going around killing each other in. And those games are great. But you can also get these great indie games that are these smaller games that, you know, or retro games, like pretty much any type of gaming you're into exists now.
I wish they made an Apocalypse Now game. It's actually that game. you're going up the river to go get Kurtz, and you're fucking battling, you know what I mean?
Well,
and
they tried.
You stop and surf for a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, Charlie, don't surf!
Right.
That's a great game to me, like, or Jaws, where you're actually the shark, you know? Like, but I'm old. You know, I'm just naming, they're like, dude, nah, that's boring shit.
Well, there are games that are, you know, doing that, because before the tech was limited, but there's a game that it came out for the PlayStation 3, and it's going to get an updated version for the PlayStation 4 called The Last of Us. That's a fun game, I think, to play, but it also tells a really gripping story and is well acted.
Right.
And, it's not Apocalypse Now. It's a different story, but it's like a mature, intelligent story that's really cool. And now there's these new horror games that are out where it's not Jaws the movie, but it's that type of thing where you're not just mowing down hordes of enemies. Like, what they spent their resources on is making it feel immersive, and you don't have a weapon, and you're just trying to survive and escape this thing.
Yeah, there's like a game Bobby Lee was hooked on, SoundCloud, or what's it called?
I don't know.
Cloud, or you make your own character, and then you go into these worlds, and you're a killer. Or you can make the character where you're not the killer and you're dodging the killer. Fuck, I forget what it is. But he was hooked on it. I never saw him. We were on the road. He was in his room the whole time. He never came out of the hotel.
Yeah. That's funny.
But do you let your daughter? How old is she now?
Not quite 1.5.
Right, but would you let her play video games?
Oh, yeah.
You know, these people, they're like, oh, my kid, these fucking Al Madrigal calls them, what do they call it, hippie no sugar moms or whatever. I love that.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I mean, I played video games and you played them, and it's just fun.
Well, I think, too, where the art is now is, you know, it's like anything else. I have a bit about this. This is not the bit. I'm not running material. But, like, you know, I envision when books first came out, the printing press, people are like, well, I'm not going to let my kid read books. That'll rot their brain. You need to hear oral stories. That's the way you convey. And it's the same thing. Like, yeah, you can rot your brain with shit. But I think what video games are doing now is just as important as what books are doing. And there's great movies out there that tell great stories. And, I don't watch TV. I only read books. Well, that's dumb because you're missing great fucking storytelling.
That's totally dumb when people say that kind of stuff. Like I say I don't watch TV, But that's mostly because I have no time.
Right.
And I'll watch it on the fly on a computer, but I don't sit at my house on the couch and go, all right, what's on tonight?
Right.
Like the old days. I was just thinking a couple nights ago, I remember when there was just four channels. You know, sure. when you couldn't afford cable.
Yeah.
And that's just what you watched.
Right. Yeah.
Weird as that, right?
Yeah.
Now there's so many channels, so much stuff. There's so many video games. There's so much music. You really got to pick and choose what the fuck you want to do, you know?
Which I think is great. I mean, yeah, you can dive into anything. I really do think we're in a golden age of all this stuff where you can't watch everything, but there's so much great stuff out there.
Yeah.
Breaking
Bad.
I mean,
no TV, no Breaking Bad.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I think
it's always like when I say somebody boos LA.
Yeah.
I said it on my podcast before. I like, oh, but you watch TV, you fucking hypocrite. You sure. know what I mean? How are you going to boo LA, the machine of TV?
Yeah. Well, it's all Toronto now. No.
So what's your video game podcast called?
It's called DLC. The letter's DLC. It's on the 5x5 network. I host it with Jeff Cannata, who people might know. He had a great web show called The Totally Rad Show for years. And yeah, it, if you don't like video games, don't listen to the show. But if you think you might be interested, it's fun. It's Jeff Cannata and I, and then we have a rotating third guest this coming. We record live Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific, and then it comes out on iTunes and stuff. This coming Monday, we actually have Emily Gordon, who's the producer of The Meltdown Show. It's fun. Like I said, if you don't like video games, don't listen. But if you do, I think it's a fun video game podcast.
Those guys got a great thing going over there, right?
Yes, they do.
I love it, man.
Yeah.
I go every week.
Yeah.
And hey, I was there last night. Judah Freelander just destroying.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, they had that great Wes Anderson art in there.
Yeah.
It was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Well, fuck, man. Thanks for coming by.
Dude, thanks. This is so fun. I feel like we covered almost everything. So.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I love you because you're multi, you know, just fun. I don't like when people box someone in, you know what
sure.
I mean?
Yeah.
Like people box me in. I keep getting these emails, dude, you gotta have the third drummer on from Rat. It's like, you're missing the point.
Well, he's a good guy, though. Have you met him?
Yeah. But I mean, people miss the point. I talk rock, I'll talk movies, I'll talk country, I'll talk jazz, I'll talk the planet.
Yeah.
Whatever. You've got to fucking, you know, have a bigger reach. You know what I'm saying? So I love that about you. Your fingers are in all kinds of pies, whoever made that one up.
Only one woman's pie, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. One woman's pie. How many years?
This July, we'll have been married 11 years. And
Now, do you guys do it all the time or birthdays and Christmas?
What our birthday? No, we have a healthy, good sex life. I mean, there's the fine line between balancing that I work all night and she works all day, and we have a kid.
Right.
But we had a kid.
Yeah.
You know, we did it once.
Yeah, you did it once.
Yeah.
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 No, because that's got to be some whole demon with me inside of me, and I think that goes down to weird. I bought this. All right. Oh, I'm bored with it now.
Sure. Well, it's not, but marriage is, it's the best thing that ever happened to me, but I'm not saying that everyone needs to get married.
No,
I love comedy, but I'm not saying everyone needs to do it.
Absolutely.
So it's the same kind of thing. I couldn't be happier, but if you don't want it, don't.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd be stupid.
I always say, don't cheat. Break up with the person and go fuck everyone you want.
Sure. Yeah.
Why do you need the mom? Like, that's a pussy man. That's a pussy man right there. That's like, well, I can't be without her, but I do need this.
Right.
But I do think marriage would last way longer if you could get a couple free rides each year at the rub and tug.
Well, some people have that.
I know.
And that's great.
Now, if you have that, because that's just a release. You know what I mean? That's a whole nother podcast.
Subscribe to Dean's podcast, Dean on Marriage, launching July on iTunes.
You got anything coming up? I'm going to drop this on Thursday.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I should probably be prepared.
Oh, yeah. So what you got shows, right?
So the second Thursday of every month is improv or stand-up here at UCB. Currently, the second Tuesday of every month is the live What's New. I think this summer it might be moving to the third Tuesday.
Right.
But those are here in L.A., San Diego is
Lestat's
Comedy
Night. And if you live in San Diego, go to this. It's the finest show.
Oh, thank
you. One of the best rooms I've ever been in. It's the Virgil of San Diego. It really is. I just did it recently, and it was probably one of the funnest times I've ever had. I've done it a ton of times.
Yeah. We love having
you. But this particular one was just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's great. And then if you're not in L.A., I'll be in Salt Lake City April 25th and 26th at Wise Guys, which I'm looking forward to. And then May, I think, 29th, 30th, I'm looking, whatever that weekend is, a new comedy club opened in New Orleans called Lucky's. And
dope.
Down there kind of when they're opening up. And those are kind of the road gigs I know about right now.
And you got a Twitter. What is it?
At Spicer, S-P-I-C-E-R. And online, christianspicer.com. Come say hi.
Or you can call them what I do, Spicy Town. Spicy Town!
I had a woman at a grocery store. You know when you use your Vons card or whatever and they like say your name?
Uh-huh.
Like, thanks for, she was like, thank you, Mr. And she paused just for half a second. And then she goes, Spicker. And I'm like, that's on you.
Wow.
Like, what? You just wanted to be racist. Like, I couldn't believe
it. Spicker!
Like, my name's not that weird. And why would you guess that it's the racist thing?
That's hilarious. Spicker.
And she, I was just
Christian like, Spicker.
That's, yeah, it's so, I was like, you never, I don't care if your last name is the N-word.
Here's the problem.
You don't guess that when you say it. Even if my last name was S-P-I-C, you would say Spiss or something. You don't say the racist thing. Yeah.
And then, you know, also in my mind, maybe she's not racist. She's just dumb. So she's counting your change back. Yeah. What the fuck? You know what I mean? Like, hey, I gave you a 20.
I'm going to steal that from you. That's
okay,
fine.
Go ahead, man. Use that. Counting. There you go, guys. Christian Spicker right there. Thank you for tuning in. See ya.